Welcome to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Obsessions podcast. Welcome to episode 101.
In Dalmatian.
That's right. Dude, yeah. That's a classic. Wow. 101. Yeah.
Dalmatian.
Dalmatian.
Dalmatian. Dalmatian.
I think so. That's a great movie, actually.
It's been a while.
It's a classic. Wow. That's wonderful.
Stop being a classic when someone decided to go 101 and a half.
It's true.
No. Not all sequels.
No. That is exactly. Most of the time, sequels suck.
Yeah.
Most of the time. Pirates of the Caribbean, first one was good. All of them just got worse.
Twilight.
arguable. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
What other sequels? Spider-Man. This will be very controversial. The very first one.
Which one is that?
The one with the OG Peter Parker.
What's like his the name? Tobey Maguire one?
Yes. Yes.
Wasn't there something before that?
I don't know. If there was, I was not alive to experience it, and I don't want to.
I've watched Into the Metaverse like 5 times this month. Because rain. But it's so good. It's one of my favorites. I don't know. Yeah. But I get it. Tobey Maguire.
So good. So
big shout out.
So iconic, man. I
hope he's a listener of the pod.
Wow, that would be incredible.
Yeah. But, unlike sequels, returning producers are always a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yep. Just wanted to confirm.
Yep. Yep. It's a decent brew, actually.
Mm.
It actually has a really nice syrupy mouthfeel.
It does.
I don't know if that's because we actually threw the cone in there or not. Maybe the conus. It was a win.
Yeah. This is nice. It's okay. I actually didn't know what to think of this coffee, but I kind of enjoy it. Knowing the backstory of it, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what I see on the label. It's good. It's just not like the bonkers for me personally. Yeah. And I admit that I have a specific preference for what I think is bonkers and what I interpret it as that. So for somebody else, this could be really incredible. Yeah. And it is like a really solid coffee. It's probably one of the better ones we've had recently on the pod. So, this is a coffee from Nemesis Coffee. Nemesis is killer. Probably one of my favorite roasting companies in Canada.
Yeah.
They're
good.
They're just so dialed. Everything. Sourcing, roasting. I'm shocked how small their roastery is. Still boggles my mind. Yeah. I don't know how they do what they do. But this is what? Costa Rica geisha blend? Geisha. Geisha. Yeah. Semi-wash process.
Yeah. It's not like a bonkers geisha, and we talked about that when I got this as a gift. I don't think this is a coffee that's for sale. I don't think they sell this coffee.
Yeah.
They were roasting it for a specific purpose and all that, and they threw a little sample bag to bring home to sip on. I think it met my expectations, especially talking to the roaster. Why am I blanking on their name? Totally forgot. Shoot. But Joe, my friend at Nemesis, brought me in and showed me around and told me the backstory that this coffee, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut at this time. This coffee was roasted for a specific reason and it was sourced for a specific reason. So I think everything they said about it makes a lot of sense in what we're tasting in the cup too.
Probably like intense berry.
Yeah.
That's a bulk of the sweetness. It has like a little, it's very delicate. It's nice on the mouthfeel. A little bit of, there's some bright acidity, but it's also really sweet outside of that berry that's on the forefront. Can't quite put my finger on it, but.
There's something about it that I'm not sure. But there's something about it that is not like a Panamanian geisha.
It's a Costa Rican.
Right. That's what I mean. It's like, I think I could distinctly pick this out of a cupping as not Ibanamanian geisha. Does that make sense? It's like, I think a lot of the times when geishas get compared, that's one of the origins that people compare geishas to, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah.
I'm loving the brew. We this time threw in a cone into the Breville Precision Brew, which is what we use here for the pod. Hopefully we'll be able to snag maybe a ratio for SCA, but we'll see.
Dude, we need to become resellers.
Maybe we'll start reselling them. Yeah. We've been talking about that for a while. But we threw the cone in there, and the cone kind of changes up the whole brew.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you some more thicker brew bed. It's a cone shape, not a basket, flat bottom. The flat bottom on the Breville Precision Brewer is pretty big. It's a big base.
It's deep.
It's deep. It's wide. And I bet it could probably brew way more coffee than what we brew for these pods.
Yeah.
So that's why, I don't know, drinking this, I'm like, maybe we should just completely switch to using that cone attachment.
I'm not sure about that.
I mean, it's tasty.
Yeah, it's good.
Unless this is just
not the same.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, folks, if you're listening to this and you're not at SCA, I'm sorry. But at least you got a pod to listen to.
Yeah.
So we'll probably be, if all goes well, I don't know. I'm like, after the last 3 years of trying to go and not working, I'm like, man, I don't know what's going to happen this time. Who knows? But if all goes well, we're at SCA today. We're going to a roasting class in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Saturday morning. And then we're going to go walk the floor, hopefully hang out with a few friends, hopefully connect and see Kyle.
Woo-hoo.
Yep. And go to a couple more cuppings, events, meet with producers, all the fun stuff. So hopefully we'll be able to also document the whole thing, so you guys can get a little video. And I know I'm behind on editing videos, but it takes so long. I'm midway through the Proud Mary Geisha one.
Oh, I was going to ask about that one.
It's coming.
We still need the Jorge story.
Yeah, it's. I also don't want to hurry the Jorge story because I'm like, I want it to be at least decent. There was a couple things that got in the way of it, but anyways.
Yeah.
But I want to take some good time and thought to get that release. But anyways, hopefully everybody's doing great.
Yep.
Well, Sergio has nothing else to say.
I'm stoked to be at SCA. That's the hype feels real right now.
Wow. Yeah. It's Thursday night and we're leaving in like 12 hours and I'm not packed and I have a lot of work to do. So alrighty.
Classic.
I just wanted to talk about a little bit of some coffee flavors, roasting, sample roasting. Due to a couple things, I had a little conversation with ChatGPT, and then we just got done roasting some coffee for some friends of ours, Onyx. They're Onyx Coffee Importers, not the lab. Roasted some coffee for their booths of some gem lots that came out tasting pretty tasty. But it was one of those things, again, like what happened in December. We did a pod episode about this. It's like, how do we, you know, we have limited quantity, literally one batch, two batches. And how do we go about to roasting those? And how do we enter roasting a coffee that maybe we've sourced? And we're in full sourcing mode right now. We're cupping some coffees.
Yep.
I don't know. Thoughts?
Yeah. I think between finding coffees that we need for our menu and the experience with Onyx, there's a little bit of insight that I think you and I discussed earlier about the idea of let's say we got new coffees, but also we're looking for new coffees, what the initial thought process behind that is. So the first thing for sure when we approach this, we're already made up our mind to knowing what we want on our menu. So whether that's a coffee that is slightly classic, slightly, I don't want to use the word generic, but we all know the coffees that are the daily drivers, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we're looking for a daily driver to fit on the menu, we know where we're going to look for those. If we're looking for something a little on the wilder side and we're looking for something like more berry, we know where to look for those. So that's the initial approach to all of this. And I think the interesting thing is this last time we did it, we did find a coffee, but we weren't able to snag it.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. There was not very limited quantity. And when we finally got to deciding on it, it was too late. It's the nature of the game. It sucks.
That was probably one of the best Colombians I think we've cupped in a hot minute.
Yeah.
It was so good. And it shattered some expectations of like, man, you have to pay a pretty penny for tasty coffees. And that was like such a banger of a coffee.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're going into these cuppings already thinking, man, what spots are we going to fill on our menu that need to be filled where we're selling out of some inventory? We need to replace it, which is already a big thing, because every time we're going into roasting, especially, I think a big part of the roasting process is also knowing what the coffee has. We've said this so many times, but it's so important, actually. It's actually one of the most important things, is that you can't pull out more out of a coffee than what is already in there.
Yeah.
You can only maximize its potential, not increase its potential.
Yeah.
And why is that important? Is because if that is the case, then most of your work is being done, most of the hard work is being done before it gets to the roastery. Like how your sourcing is going to play a massive role to the end product, to the end coffee. And so as we're going in, we're also, this is something recently we've started doing, and this is just to get a good understanding of what the coffee has to offer. We've started to sample roast almost every coffee that we're cupping, every sample that we're cupping, sample roasting it twice with two different Ikawa profiles. And there's a few reasons for that. We can do another episode on Ikawa completely another day, but number one, sometimes depending on the coffee, some profiles are make or break. Sometimes you use the same profile, but because of the coffee's moisture content, elevation, all this stuff, it turns out tasting peanutty or not much, or it turns out tasting really roasty.
Yeah.
So then you have a backup roast that's kind of a different profile. But also on top of that, even if two roasts are good, like this Colombian, like two very dramatically different roast, but the flavor profiles were also fairly different, but both really good.
And so
what does that tell me? That tells me, hey, this coffee has some range, and this coffee is also so good that you have some give to actually make it something unique, in the sense of you can tailor this coffee exactly to your needs. Where other coffees is like, well, if you go a little too far or a little too light, it all of a sudden falls apart and becomes really uninteresting.
Yeah. I think also because we've been doing this on and off and we have some kind of system in place already, it's allowed us to also see and plan ahead for how we do start roasting this coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that an Ikawa roast can be moved to a production roast. I'm not saying that like curve-wise or anything. That's not the point. But there are slight expectations that are set when we know how this coffee tastes when it's vegetal and what this coffee tastes when it's a little roasty or over-roasted.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives that kind of range and those kind of parameters and helps us think that way and maybe gives us a half a step ahead. Not a full step, but it puts us in a good place, I would say. On top of that, we're still cupping all of this blind. So I think that's, we talk about that all the time, but I want to re-remind everyone is like, we're still preparing this and cupping this as objectively as we can, because we don't want to fool ourselves by assuming that this coffee is going to taste this way because we know this information about it. Yes. Or even a roast that when you're roasting, like the roast numbers that are attached to each coffees, we don't want to assume that just because it was roasted on this profile, it's going to taste better. Yes. And it's also very difficult after having a lot of data and having using the system for a while, you can kind of predict like, oh, we kind of like this roasting style more. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't negate the fact that we just still don't know what the coffee is going to taste like and respond to a different roast. So I feel like what we do really well is we do try to watch our blind spots and make sure we don't make a very easy common mistake when it comes to either just being like, oh, it could be very easy for us just to say, we'll just roast one sample. We know this roast works. And taste the coffee and be like, you know, that was mediocre. But we trust that maybe roast profile, and we made a mistake by accident, and now we walked away from a coffee that could have been excellent. So small systems like that have been super helpful in evaluating the green that we're going to buy, and then making sure that we're always a half a step or a step ahead of our decision-making when it comes to actually preparing the coffee for a production roast.
100%. Which then, once we've selected a coffee, and it's at the roastery, we're ready to roast it, I think there are a few kind of indicators of that we use for our sample roasts to be able to know where should we lean towards on this roast. Not to say that we can, you know, get it dialed within one roast. The first batch is perfect. You know, it does happen sometimes, like just happened to us recently, which I was like, holy cow, that was incredible. That's a perfect roast. I would not change anything on it. But that doesn't happen actually often. And so sometimes you need a batch or two or three to get it in the spot. But what you get on your cupping and your sourcing tasting, that gives you enough sufficient information to be able to get you going in the right direction. So I think you mentioned coffees that are a little bit more approachable, chocolatey, you know, that are supposed to be sweet, big, rich bodied, that are maybe supposed to kind of be directed a little towards espresso. We don't really have an espresso roast or a filter roast, but coffees that were like, oh, this is a coffee that we can sell to folks, to either other cafes or folks just asking to brew coffee at home, we can direct them toward that coffee to be enjoyed on espresso. And so oftentimes those coffees, we know, okay, there's not really a good reason for you to go ultra light on those coffees.
Yeah.
If it's supposed to be big, chocolatey, round, caramel, plum, stone fruits, then it's actually going to taste better if we push it on the tail end of our kind of roasting system. Right. Actually, this is, I think, something we can even talk about on another episode, but we approach a lot of our coffees actually very similarly, regardless of origin and regardless of everything else, because we've already built a system that kind of gets us in the ballpark straight off of the first roast. But within that system, there's still leeway. There's still like a 4 or 5, you know, 6, 5 degree range that we play in, which for those coffees, we know, okay, we want to hit the tail end of that range.
Yeah.
Coffees, you know, that might be taste giving us something different, you know, something fruitier, berry, maybe we're picking up some floral delicates. We know that, hey, maybe we need to pull back. Maybe we need to preserve some of those things.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're going for. We're going for something that's a little bit more filter roast-esque. Yeah. But once again, not because we roast. Not that we have filter or espresso roasts.
Right. Yeah. And as you were talking about, I'm thinking, man, there's a lot of stuff that we actually, the data that we collect before we start like production roasting, that's been very crucial to making sure that our decision making for where the coffee lands in the menu was proper. One of the things is there's been certain coffees that absolutely just stick out on a cupping table. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, we love this coffee. And I think one of the important things I would want to share with everyone is like, hey, try to jot down as much information as you can about what stuck out to you. Like, mm-hmm. why do you absolutely love this coffee? Especially if it's a pre-ship. Mm-hmm. If you got a sample that's still at origin and it hasn't shipped, and you're probably going to cup it again when it arrives to confirm it, you have to figure out what you liked about it. Mm-hmm. Because it can go from something that you were like completely blown away, maybe a few weeks passed, a month passed, and you forgot about what you were blown away. You just remember it was a good coffee, but you don't remember the specifics. And then you settled on a good coffee, and then time passes again, and you're like, yeah, it's fine. And you completely lose what you were fascinated with it. And that not only can just skew your decision-making when it comes to where the coffee belongs on your menu, that could also skew your decision-making on how you roast that coffee. Mm-hmm. We've had that problem where we try to take a coffee too light because we were trying to chase this flavor that we thought would come from roasting lighter. Mm-hmm. When we look back and we're like, well, actually, when we cupped it, we measure this coffee and it actually tasted great at this range of color. And, you know, we've made those mistakes already. And now we know that when something sticks out, we need to get as much information as possible.
Yeah. That's very good. I think that actually I'm just blinking right now because there was something you said earlier that I was like, oh, there's something that I can riff off of because I think that was important. But I think you're right that like we do take quite a bit of notes, and even especially when we're sample roasting and we're taking notes on the table that we chose the coffee on, samples that mean, that is, we'll actually sometimes even have, when the coffee comes in, we'll actually sample roast it with that same sample roast and compare it to our production roast.
Right.
To say, okay, this coffee's dialed in our production roast. Here's why we chose it with this profile. Do these even come close?
Yeah.
And hey, if your sample roast is still tasting better than your production roast,
it's a problem.
It's a problem. Yeah. You got to go back and figure out how to get it better. However, if your production roast is tasting even better than your sample roast, and you bought the coffee based off of the sample roast flavor profile that you really liked, then I mean, that's a win.
Yeah, that's killer. I agree. I wish I could say that that happens more and easier. It does take some time.
Yeah.
Because that helps our dial-in process. Sometimes we may think a coffee is dialed and ready to serve when it's actually not. Mm-hmm. And we have to step back, reevaluate, and try to figure that out. So it's not always as clean and smooth as we would love it to be. But it's definitely worth the effort that we're trying to put in to not only find the beautiful coffees, but roast them in a way that kind of reflects and like shows what beauty we noticed before we even added our skill level to revealing that. I know I said a bunch of tacky words on that reflect. I get it. But I was being real. I was being very intentional with that. We do try that. And I think there's a lot that we put in rather more than just systems. You know, we talk about systems, and I don't just want to sound like, oh, we put these systems in place to make the machine work. That's not the only thing that we're doing here. Yes, it's important for everything to be in order, but we're also putting these systems in place because we want to make sure that what we're serving is like to the best of our ability.
For sure. And I think a lot of these things now, looking back, I'm like, man, we've learned so much from trial and error.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're a roaster listening to this and, you know, you're in your early stages and we have a lot of you guys that are tuning in, man, it's, there's only so much you can, like, back when we were starting, I wish we had this podcast. And I mentioned that on last week's podcast, that I wish there was a resource like this that I could listen to and learn from. But on the other hand, I'm like, just because you've listened to the podcast for 3 years, you know, that does not make you ready or prepared to take on everything that both the sourcing, the sample roasting, and the production roasting, that balance it doesn't prepare you enough for that.
Yeah.
Where a lot of times you kind of have to go thinking about it like, man, there's a lot of things that I'm going to make mistakes on, but that's just part of the process. That's part of the game of just learning. And man, the stuff that we've learned through like firsthand trial and error, it hits. Like you learn it really well after a couple, you know, failed iterations. Yeah. But I think also like back to, you know, what you said about systems, those are things that we've just learned over time that actually optimizes how we roast, how we source, so that at the end of the day, all of you listening to this podcast can get tastier coffees. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, we're trying to foster relationships with producers, but also the other side of this is we're trying to roast and serve the tastiest coffees that we possibly can.
Yeah.
Despite if it being a geisha or a bourbon or a Caturo or whatever it is, we want a maximum unreal experience with these coffees, and having these things in place is how we get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things that comes to my mind is, I don't know who said this. I'm not going to say their name because I'm probably going to be wrong about that. But the saying that says, if you haven't roasted 1,000 batches, you really don't know what you're doing yet. And I remember when we hit our 1,000th batch, and we were like, are we there yet? Like, did we get it? I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
But looking back, and we're well past 1,000, and we're like, oh, we're still personally dialing in. Like, we're still figuring this thing out. And there is some joy in the process of, you know, picking up some fresh green for the first time, being super excited about it, cupping it, and just so much passion is like just comes out on the cupping table because you're exploring these flavors. And then moving forward to where you take all of that passion and you kind of categorize it in these systems. And now you're actually kind of that machine starts working and starts creating something new, which makes us even more passionate. And that's what you were like just saying is like, at the end of the day, our ultimate passion is to be like, okay, we want to, you know, foster these relationships with the producer. That means we have to buy more coffee from them and be connected with them relationally. But we also know that if we buy more coffee, we better do it justice so that when folks are drinking it, they're like, yeah, like I want to buy more of this coffee. So then we foster relationships with our folks who are drinking our coffee. Mm-hmm. So I think with all of that said, that sums up why systems are important, and specifically when we're choosing green coffee, I would say.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said in the beginning, is that that's a big chunk of being, I think, a great roasting company is having your green coffee buying dialed, and then figuring out how do you take the delicious green coffee and do your best to keep that something special all the way through into the hands of people with your coffee and, you know, with your coffee in their hands.
Yeah.
You know, I, at the end of the day, we're just trying to preserve that as much as possible for people to have a great experience. And and so I think that entire process, we get new green coffee, it is the most exciting thing ever. Yeah. Like, I wish I could just be hired to just like roast, cup, once it's dialed in, I just go on to the next coffee. Because it's just such an exciting like challenge and risk to go through that journey of literally cupping it from the sample roast, taking notes, recording everything that you think about this coffee, the color, where it's tasting great, and then figuring out, man, how do I translate this into a 15, you know, 10, a 6-pound batch on your roaster?
Yeah.
And for all of us, that's going to be a little different what that process looks like, how your machine functions. But I think that's actually also what comes with time, what comes with intense note-taking and learning and recording and just dialing in your processes, you know?
That's great. I'm like, man, I think we've said a lot of practical stuff in this episode, but also the final thing I'll like hammer down is like systems are not just created or made to be systems. They're there for to be with a purpose, and there's a result for the system. So I would keep that in mind. It's like, hey, you're doing this because you want to find good coffees. You want to produce tasty coffees. You want your folks who are buying your coffee to be like satisfied. So at least for me, that's when I see that, when I look ahead of why I have these systems in place, that brings a lot of purpose to creating these different rituals, from slurping the cup to making sure that all of the notes are blind and all of the nitty gritty details.
This podcast was not supposed to be about systems, but that's what it came down to. That's really at the end of the day what it's also really about. Because I think, you're right. I think those systems are important, and especially once you do them 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the line, you just find a groove. Really, it's just like systems, in other words, is just like a groove that you can get into that works and empowers you to do things really, really well and very seamlessly and efficiently, you know? And we know we didn't give too much exact specifics about that transfer between sample roasting and production roasting, but I also want to, like, it's hard to oftentimes talk about these things because it's not quite the same for everybody. Like, there's so much personalization. I don't know whether you roast on an air roaster, a drum roaster, or how you cup, or what kind of flavor profiles you're going for. However, if you've had our coffee, if you've been listening to the pod, this should give you a little bit of insight as to how we get to the end result. And giving you like a little glimpse into, man, we take actually what we cup, what we sample, roast, and cup personally through data, through information, and then we translate that as best as we can into our production roasts, and we just compare it all with a lot of note-taking.
No, that's solid, 100%. I agree. We can...
Alrighty,
there's folks. So many para episodes we can make off of this one,
too. I know. Plenty of episodes to come. Friends, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Sessions podcast. Hopefully, over the next couple episodes, we'll see some guests on the pod, which will be exciting. I'm pretty pumped about that. We're taking the whole podcast set up to Portland with us to do some podcasts on the road. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, hopefully everyone had a great weekend. And as we always say, just a simple reminder, reflect what's good.